Dare to be Human is a production of Cop It. In this podcast, we explore the ways applied improvisation shows up in the wild. If you've ever wondered about how improv could be used in your world, check us out at copit.com.
Olivia,
Happy New Year.
That would be Lunar New Year this time.
That's right. The year of the tiger. My amazing brother is actually a year of the tiger.
Really?
Birthborn person. Yes, precisely.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. What are you?
Oh, I'm a snake, which is horrible because that's what I'm terrified of. Oh, well, that makes it better. That does make it better.
I thought you were going to say it's terrible, like the way whenever I tell people I'm a Gemini, they're like, oh.
No, it's only terrible for me on a very low level where I'm absolutely petrified of the actual creature. Maybe there's something there for me to explore, but now I know.
Power maybe.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, yeah. More to explore.
Well, yeah. But without any further ado, it was the actual solar new year that most of us here in the West think of when we think of the new year, when we interviewed our illustrious colleague, Chris Esparza. So I think we should not wait any longer before we get to the episode.
Let's do it.
Hi, welcome. Cop It.
Hello. Yes. And hello to you all.
Happy New Year.
I hope so. There's still chaos. And yes, let's strive for happiness wherever we might find it. Take it where you can.
I think the last couple of New Years have been like, the last year was crappy. Let's get rid of it and go on to this new one. And this year I started this year with a stomach bug. So immediately I'm like, oh no, this isn't going to set the tone for the rest of my year. And it just kind of landed home this sort of, oh, this is sort of an arbitrary marker. And to, as helpful as it is for helping us turn a new leaf, wonderful. For as not helpful as it is, then we can move it to the side and just say, this is the next step. And we're just doing the next little thing. And that's where I landed with 2020. Not with excited celebration or like, screw you 2021, but just as, here we are.
Right. Well, I think we can jump right into an improv lesson that I think you all are familiar with, which is that idea of accepting with joy, right? Which is not easy. And I don't mean that in the sort of false positivity, but how do we accept the offers and the gifts that are around us, particularly when they at first glance seem and are quite unpleasant? Where do we find the joy? How do we seek joy in the midst of chaos and whatnot? And so I don't have a New Year's resolution, but just on the 2 minutes that we've already been talking, I'm thinking, right, joy. How do I accept 2022 with joy, like as a choice, right? Rather than a sort of, I'm just waiting for 2022 to decide what it's going to be. It's like, I get to decide too, don't I? Like, don't I have a say in this? And maybe there I can insert or inject joy into that somewhere.
I have four thoughts in my head, which is my typical way of being.
Shocker.
I'm going to hold on to all of them for right now, because as you know, Chris, we usually start with a Dare to be Human story. So rather than springboard off of any of those 1,000 offers that we've already laid on the table. And
yes,
I've down that road. Do you have a Dare to be Human story to share with us?
I do. And I should just more formally thank you both for allowing me to join you in this format. I am very excited. My voice may not be suggesting that because I'm trying to contain myself, but I remain thoroughly, completely, 100% excited to be in your company, to be working alongside you all and joining you all. And I think to be on the podcast today is just even better. So thank you. I start with that because my Dare to be Human story maybe ends with that. I would say it begins with transition. And last year, 2021, I think the highlight and hallmark of that was me in transition. And I think in some way, the dare to be human notion is in part the acceptance of the humanity, our own humanity and that of others. And that means the acceptance of feeling fear when we're about to make major life transitions, accepting the excitement that comes with that and the anticipation that comes with that. So 2021, I was at the start of that year, if we take it back a year ago, I was living in Eugene, Oregon. I was working as the director of diversity, inclusion, and leadership development at the University of Oregon School of Law. I had been at the University of Oregon for approximately 15 years by that point, and thus living in Eugene for 15 years. And then more broadly, had been in higher education for 20 years. But for the last, for the year or two before that, had been definitely feeling the itch for transition, but I didn't have an answer to what I wanted to transition to or where. I was also in a personal relationship with somebody who lives here in New Orleans, where I am now, just giving it all away. So that also was in the works of kind of what is the next step and future for that. And I had these friends, Kat and Livia, you may have heard of them, who I had the opportunity to play with. We were in kind of the workspace playground, and I'd been invited to partner with them on a few different projects and some client work with them, and that was a joy. And with that came an invitation, skipping some parts, but in that invitation was essentially a leap for me to leave higher education, to leave my role, something that I was comfortable with, both in terms of a context, Eugene, being at the U of O, all the people and relationships that I've come to grow, love, and cherish, doing work that I was familiar with. And so leaping out of that, leaping out of little old Eugene, Oregon, because with that invitation was for me an invitation to move to New Orleans and move in with my partner, Laura. And so I think in some ways it was all very scary, and in many more ways it was all very exciting. So even when it's, I think about change and big change, and even when it's change we're choosing, it can still feel unsettling. There's the second guessing. Did I make the right choice? Am I leaping too soon? Am I leaping too far? Right. And so for me, therein lies the humanity of that any change, whether forced upon us or whether by our own invitation or invitation of people we care about, can still come with some scary wobbly knees of, oh my goodness. Or even when it's like, I finally have the opportunity I've been dreaming about. And here I am leaping and I'm midair and I don't yet know what the landing looks like. So I think 2021 and this transition into working with COPPIT and certainly relocating myself in terms of city and region is all part of this kind of dare to be human experience that I'm still in the middle of.
I'm wondering, Chris, if there was like a moment of decision for you?
I appreciate that. There's probably a few moments, right? Because I think that this transition has come through a series of decision points that stack on top of each other. But I recall you and I, Kat, having some conversations about possibility of working together. And I think that we had begun to sort of talk through what it might be like, how we each work, wanting to get to know each other a bit better. And I really appreciated just time to be intentional. And at some point, you kind of said, you know what, we could do this all day. We could do this forever. I think what I need to do is make an offer and an invitation, and then let's deal with something actual rather than hypothetical. And I think that was a decision point of like, like this is a real thing, not just an imagined, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could work together? And so that's a very specific point where it seemed to kind of be drawn out, and then all of a sudden it seemed to happen quickly. And it was, and I knew what I wanted to say, but I felt like I knew I needed to take some time. And so it was like, I know I'm supposed to slow down and like think this through and talk to my loved ones. And I think I shared that with you of like, I need to talk to my people. And I did, but I knew my heart already knew that I wanted to say yes, but that was definitely a moment of deciding, because with that decision was going to come many more. Well, then that means I need to tell my work, like I'm actually leaving, I'm quitting, and I need to pack up and I need to move and I need to figure out what I'm bringing or not bringing. And I need to check in with my partner about like, this is real. Like even we had been imagining. So that exchange between you and I was a particular moment of time where that decision was made very clear and very specific.
I remember that.
How do you remember it?
Well, I guess what strikes me just in hearing you talk about it is that idea of sort of slow, fast.
Mm.
It resonates for me with the way we started today talking about the, you know, the change of the year and how time is funny. Is it, you know, how like you, things can mm-hmm. feel like they're drawn out forever. You're waiting forever and ever for something. And then it can change on a dime, you know, I mean, in terrible ways.
Yeah.
You had a little car accident recently, although nobody's fine, luckily.
Yes.
But, you know, things happen very quickly, right? Or, you know, my daughter was born and then she was going to graduate high school and go off to college. And then like, now she's in college, right? And like high school graduation, like it was an afternoon and then it was gone and we were waiting for it forever, right?
Yeah.
And something about, you know, we were talking for a long time and then I realized too, oh, right, I sort of have to make a move, right? I have to come up with an offer. Like, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Which it just changes the sort of, I feel like there's some sort of chemistry word that I could use here mm-hmm. if I hadn't skipped right, chemistry, right? The calculus is a math word, sort of like a science word, right? It changes the alchemy of the
right.
equation very quickly. Something there really resonates for me about the slow fastness.
Yeah.
And here's what I'll add that, you know, that was true of our relationship, but I also feel like it's been true for the company in general. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, Libby, about this, that I feel like Coppet as an organization for a lot of years, we've been saying it would really be great to have a partner in this work, to have someone at a very senior level who can bring ideas and build programs and expand our range of thought leadership, you know, and not just have another hire, you know, sort of gun for hire. Although I was trying to avoid that violent imagery, whatever, a clown for hire. And
still violent. some people.
Funny for hire.
Fair.
Yes. And then here you are, and it still, I think, feels a little magical to us that we bagged the bunny. Violent.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking about the sort of you saying that it still feels magical, and I think it still does. And I think for a lot of reasons, and I think one of those reasons, I'm also humbled and reminded by Chris, you sharing your story of recognizing that to us, it feels like this very magical wave of a wand. But behind the wand waving is talking to your people and figuring out moving logistics. If you were doing any one of the things that was involved in your transition this past year or so, it would have been a huge transition, a huge leap, a lot of energy invested into something if it was any one of those things. So it gives me some of that appreciation of like recognizing that there's the sort of duck looks calm on top and then the feet are kind of kicking below the water. So I think that's some of the magic of it seeming to just like, you're here and now, and our job is we just get to like greet and welcome this amazing person who's going to add so much value and who already has. So I'm appreciative of sharing that it was still this, that it still is this journey, right? And not to take that for granted at all. And I'm reminded of when I got engaged, I had only met my husband. I had known him for a while, but it seemed like it was a very fast thing. And I remember, and it was like in both of our hearts, we knew, and it was all that Hallmark movie stuff that you just like, when you know kind of thing. And it all just felt true. And my stepdad said to me, he said, good things happen over time and great things happen all at once is I believe the quote of what he said. So, or happen fast. I'll have to go back and do the right one, but it was something like that. And that kind of struck me also as we're talking about this kind of time.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me. I love that quote or whatever.
Sorry, Jay.
It still resonated, right?
Yes.
It did what it was supposed to do. Because you all are helping me think back of, this was a decision that didn't start in 2021. It started many years before, thinking about what might come next. It started years before that, even in grad school, when I imagined doing consulting work on a full-time basis, and but just never actualized that, right? And so there had been brewing something all along, maybe not always consciously, but it was there, such that by the time we got to this point, like that felt like the long part. It felt like it went quickly, but it wasn't without some degree of, I don't know that preparation suggests intentionality, but some kind of preparatory thinking, feeling, desiring, hunger, all of that, right? And the imaginations of what could be. I think where I struggled through that process is I knew that a transition would need to come. I just didn't know what it was. Like some people have this picture of, I'm following this direct line of, I do this job. And then I, after that, one goes to do this other job, or I send and move up in ranks in the organization I'm in. I never had that. Like I never imagined myself following a straight line. I don't think I have. And I imagine others can resonate with that. And so it is the sense that I knew a transition would come, but I didn't have an answer for what I thought would be on the other end of that until 2021, when it just material. That's the part that felt quick. Some colleagues of mine and I, we had the opportunity to present at a conference last year, and we talked about change and transition. And we were proposing this idea. There are many models out there that might describe the change process, either at an individual level or organizational level. But one of the ways we were thinking about it was there's the leap, but in with that, just beyond that is the sense of courage and where do we find the courage, right, to make that leap? And that will be mediated by how much of a leap we're needed to make. And if it's a leap to move across the country, what kind of courage is needed that? Or to just kind of throw away set aside higher education and say, I'm leaving that. And I don't know if I'm coming back. Is what's the courage? And then outside of that, what is the context? Right? Is the context supporting me to have the courage to make this leap, right? And because it could be that in a different time, maybe outside of a pandemic, or maybe maybe that context did help. You know, we're able to do this. We're doing this podcast. We're doing much of our work right now remotely. And so there's a context that facilitates some of that decision, right? And so the context can facilitate the courage, or the context of, I think you, Kat, having that, your courage to say, I want to make an offer here, and I want to, like for you, right? What does it mean for Coppet to expand in this way? Even though it was something you all have talked about and desired, it was sort of like, well, there's courage in that. And then when I see that, like, well, Kat just made this big move in terms of her own courage and risk in me, investing in me. And Livia's, smiling all along saying, yes, let's do this. And so it's in that sense, that context kind of models for me, okay, how do I also then leap with them, right? We're all making a leap. I think anytime you add someone new, in some ways, if I know it's overplayed, but the analogy of like, oh, family, I'm not sure we would say that, but like anytime you're adding a new team member or a family member in this kind of way, that it's a change for all of us, right? Even though you've been in this context, I'm new to it, but because my introduction thus brings about for you all as well differently, but it shapes where things go next.
You mentioned earlier this idea of accepting offers, is the term we use in improv, right? An offer is anything. Mm-hmm. Accepting with joy. And we've just talked about courage. I'm interested in the modifiers that we've introduced in terms of accepting what's happening or accepting the offers in our lives. I wonder if you could talk about joy or courage, not just that we accept what's true and what's offered to us, but the how of how we accept things.
One of the exercises that was introduced to me at another conference many years ago was getting up and milling about the room for a minute and high-fiving everyone that you could and saying to them out loud and with enthusiasm, so glad you're here. And I would do this exercise regularly on campus, and immediately you feel the energy shift in the room. And you could tease out of that, the power of touch when that felt like an easier thing for all of us to do, the power of seeing someone, the power of being seen, the power of just throwing our voice and enthusiasm into kind of welcoming folks into a room. But that simple phrase, so glad you're here, for me, models joy, right? It doesn't mean that all of today is going to be amazing and awesome, but it starts from joy, and or at least anchors us in joy, even if today's conversation has to be about more difficult subjects or more difficult topics. We can still find joy in being in relationship or being in contact with others or being in the work, right? Like, and so I hesitate around this because it's similar to what I've seen happen with empathy, where I think we've found lots of ways to be critical about misuses or maladaptive uses of empathy. And I think the same thing has happened with things like positivity and joy. But I think many of us have started to question, like, well, wait a minute, that's a bit superficial, or toxic positivity is something that people have talked about. So I hesitate because I simply want to acknowledge that there are risks in misusing accepting offers and risk in saying accepting with joy. But for me, it's in the nuance about what is around me, and is it all bleak and dark and negative as my newsfeed often is, or am I limiting my view? Am I not paying attention, enough attention, right? And so I think about one of the ways for me to enact joy, we talk about paying better attention, I agree, but maybe a starting place is simply to notice, what am I paying attention to? Our attention's on something. So pay attention to what you're paying attention to and ask yourself, where is there joy anywhere in that, right? And so it may be simply, do I need to expand my attention and my range of attention to invite joy from other places, or is it right there in front of me and I'm just not seeing it, which is another sidebar. Many years ago, I have two younger nephews who I was wanting to celebrate their birthdays with them. I was going to be traveling down to Southern California where they live. They've done all the theme parks, whatnot, did not need me to take them to do that. They have all the toys they need, did not need me to do that. I, through some internet searching, discovered geocaching, which is this worldwide scavenger hunt. And I was fascinated by it, read a couple articles, sounded like a great thing to do with kids. And sure enough, we went out, we found geocaches, which essentially are things hidden, scattered throughout the world. They're like little boxes hidden. Some of them have trinkets in them. Usually it's a log that you sign. Some of them get very elaborate in terms of where they're hidden, how they're hidden. Anyways, fascinated by it, brought it back home to Oregon with my friends. We spanned the state of Oregon doing geocaching. The reason why I think it fascinates me is that it reminds me that I am walking within a world where there are treasures hidden everywhere. And it's only a matter of whether I am paying enough attention to see them, right? Elizabeth Gilbert wrote something similar in her book, Big Magic, which is a sense around creativity and thinking about, well, I'm either creative or not creative is not accurate. It's, are we able to see the gifts that have already been buried inside of us, right? And so I love that a sense. And so when I come back to accepting with joy, for me, comes back to how we activate that is thinking about, where is our attention? And are we intentional about that? Or are we slipping into habits of, you know, every morning I scroll through the news, it's always bad, it's doom and gloom, the world is falling apart right in front of us. And that's not untrue, right? Like, there's a lot of reasons to be worried about the state of the world we're in. But if that is only where my attention is, then I may miss the joy that is right there in front of us. And so we can accept the offers and accept reality as it is. But if it's all negative, I feel like we've accepted an incomplete reality. I don't know if that's making sense, but that's in that is that intentionality around joy.
Mm. I love that so much. One of my first therapists, when we were working on assertiveness and being able to say what I needed, I started to become worried that I was going to become too assertive, that I was going to become too aggressive and not, you know, seeing as that, well, if I start feeling joy, then I'm going to not be paying attention to all this bad stuff. She gave me this beautiful image of, you know, you're driving on a road and you're, maybe it'll turn you this way a little bit. You might turn the steering wheel slightly. You're not going to turn yourself off the road. Like, don't worry about that. You're already going this way. Like, I think there is that fear that, well, what if I over-rotate on this? And then I don't. And I'm like, I'm not worried about in this current state of things and how my current culture or time or whatnot, that we're going to over rotate on joy and looking around and finding the little things and like being delighted and happy. I'm like, I don't think there's a danger of that. Like, don't I dare you, like, please be too joyful. Like, try, see what happens.
I love that story, Olivia, or that metaphor, because it, I think as a beginning driver, I probably had that fear that one wrong turn and I'm off the road, right? And it's only with experience that we get better at that, right? But as a beginning driver or first time riding a bike, our turns are exaggerated, right? Like, I'm going to flip around and do a 180 because I just don't, I'm out of control. So that fear makes sense to me, because it, I think anytime I step into something new, I'm worried about overcorrecting because I don't know what I'm doing yet. But with a little practice and a little patience, we find like, oh, that was never nowhere near the off being off the road, right? Like, if anything, I'm driving better now. So,
right. Yeah. I think that speaks beautifully also to our whole, you know, our get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's a space too that exists in the uncomfortableness. It's like, oh, it's just opening up this whole other side of things that just need to discover still.
It's so hard. It's certainly a mantra. I can think about being uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, but the reality of that day in, day out, like, no, I want to go back to comfort. I want to go back to being on the couch, crawling under the blanket, right? And I think back to my transition last year, I was comfortable. And I think I got to some awareness that the comfort wasn't helping me grow. But I lived in a town for 15 years and had been on a campus for that same amount of time. And the relationships were known, and the places where I get coffee are known, and the routes I take to work are known, and the work I'm doing and who I'm doing it with is mostly known. And it's not to say it was bland. It wasn't bland. It was, my life was fine. It was good. And in some ways people would say, why make a change when you're coming? And so I wanted in some ways to introduce discomfort and wanted to be okay with being uncomfortable, but it's not always easy. I for myself, at least, there are times where some of us were in so much in chaos that, like, you know what? I just need it to turn off for a minute and I need it to stop, right? Because it's painful, or we're unmoored and we can only be so long unmoored. So again, it's one of those back to, you know, Kat, we were saying earlier, accepting and accepting offers, right? And I think being uncomfortable, yes. And that notion of just acknowledging and naming for us, is that's hard. That can be really hard.
Well, you make me think as I'm listening to you, it's one of the things that we talk about that in some ways is a really, it's a privileged position to be in, a place of choosing whether or not to be uncomfortable, right? To choose to lean into being uncomfortable because I have a choice and I can, you know, lean back into comfort if I so choose.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great place of privilege. We should all be so lucky on some level. Right. And then there's another level that I hear us talking about, where are we putting our attention? And that there's a way, I think sometimes for any of us, whether we're in the middle of hardship or not, that we can shut ourselves off from what's painful, right? In a way that sometimes is really adaptive, right? And sometimes is not as helpful, because it, in some perverted ways, keeps us more stuck in the place that will ultimately be uncomfortable and cause us pain, because we're not able to look at it.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that one of the things that I'm experiencing or noticing throughout the pandemic and many of the other social issues that have reemerged in the last couple of years, is that it seems that we're more scattered in our experience of the same events, right? That some of us are coping from very traumatic experiences and in that coping have kind of shelled and, you know, separated or done what we need to do to protect ourselves. And others seem unfazed by, you know, and are kind of like ready to go back to quote unquote normal, you know? And so it's been interesting to hold some compassion for the range, knowing that there is a range, and not come in assuming that we are all dealing with it in the same way, or that we even ought to be dealing with circumstances in the same way. And so that I appreciate that reminder. And coming back to what Livia said, I think sometimes we're thinking about being uncomfortable. It's a difference between, are there social circumstances that are creating the discomfort, right? For some of us, given the bodies we're in, the lives we lived, society is making it uncomfortable. That feels different than the kind of intrapersonal, the kind of psychological, where am I comfortable? Am I comfortable in this mindset that's helping me navigate the chaos or the trauma, right? Like, so that feels different. Like, where do I can't necessarily choose how the world is treating me, but where then can I find my own source of joy when the world isn't providing it for me, right? And again, that's where I think it's hard. And I don't want to say you can think yourself out of, you know, trauma. That's definitely not where I want this to end. I think for me, it's just naming the difficulty of that. I still think it's an important tool for me. And again, I don't assume that it works equally well for others, although I have a sense that there may be value for others, but I want to be careful to not simply say, all right, you just need to accept. Libby, you just, you know, we're really sick recently and you should just accept it with joy. Yeah. And you'll be fine. Right? And all is better. Right. That's where I think toxic positivity, right? It's like, no, just turn that frown upside down and
right.
No, not at all.
But when it's dismissive, and I feel like there's something, Chris, you mentioned a little while back, just that phrase of the high-fiving, I'm so glad you're here, just the seeing and being seen being so critically important. And I think when you're doing toxic positivity, you're not actually doing that action. You're not actually seeing the person. That's not actually happening. And I love that you brought that up. And I know that because I know that that's also a kind of a core pillar at COPPIT even before you came on. And just I think that that's another core part of, I think, what's made us so glad that you're here. That whole philosophy being such a huge part of, I think, what all three of us as individuals and what us as a company do too. And
yeah.
Something about accepting whatever it is, like seeing and accepting whatever, .. with joy. So like, I'm angry, accepting that I'm angry, accepting anger. With joy. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, right? Or like, I'm depressed with joy, or this sucks with joy.
With joy.
If that's not making it too complicated, it makes me think I have this like deeply fledgling, if that makes sense, right? Like a super, super inchoate beginner's mindfulness practice. I'm just coming up on a year right now. And the connections between what we do as improvisers and mindfulness that I have lots of colleagues who've been, you know, preaching and writing books about for a long time have been talking about. I'm starting to understand it a little bit more. One of the core principles, right, is being able to see and notice more and accept without aversion, right, without turning away and not seeing or blocking, right, but also without attachment. Which is an interesting one, right? Like not grasping, which is a little more complicated concept for me, right? But without like leaning into and grasping and trying to hold on forever. I think that's, you know, in improv language, it's about, oh, I have this great idea that I have to make happen, or here's where I think the story should go, or I'm in a conversation with you and I'm, you know, I have my idea of where it should be, or, and so when we say like accepting with joy, and now we talk about the shadow side of that, like, are we insisting that we show up with a certain attitude or accept with a certain mindset? Or can we just say, oh, yes, I see this and I'm noticing this and I'm noticing that I'm resistant to it, or I'm noticing it that it's hard, or I'm noticing that I'm uncomfortable and that's okay. I can be with uncomfortable, or I can be with afraid and do it anyway, or accept it anyway.
Yeah. Appreciate all of that. Because I think those two, I think what you said, Livia, bridges with what Kat just said around somebody else not listening, but sometimes it's ourselves that we're not listening to ourselves. Right. And so how are we accepting what is, right? And yes, I am depressed, or yes, I'm hurting. Or you mentioned, Kat, earlier, a car accident I was in, where the admission to myself was, I'm afraid, that was scary, right? And that was a close call and I am okay now, but like in the moment was like, oh my goodness, this is a really big thing. And part of this big thing is me feeling afraid in a way that I'm not used to, because I, you know, haven't been in a car accident like this before. So the acceptance of that is important, and listening and having it be okay that I'm afraid in this moment, because it makes sense to be afraid in that moment, right? Like it's a natural thing to feel. I want to add to the joy, because as we're talking, I'm thinking there are other words that people might swap in there that might work. Love is one that comes to mm-hmm. mind. Or for me, it's actually play that I would often swap. And I mentioned this because I do center it around three core values that I try to come back to, almost in that spirit of meditative practice. Even though I don't have a meditation practice, I think as a meditative practice, I try to recenter myself on three core values, and they are wisdom, compassion, and play. And for me, play, we can think of literally in terms of games and experiences of games with each other. But play for me is kind of this umbrella word where I might put joy in, but I would add things like curiosity for me as a way of play, or adventure, humor, fun, adaptability, spontaneity, connection, I think, building connection with somebody, exploration, right? Having synergy on a team or a group, innovating, like those for me all fit under this umbrella of play. So similarly, when I say joy, I don't simply mean happy, right? I don't simply mean accept happily, right? But in the spirit, in this kind of larger umbrella of kind of a guide, how can I be guided, right? Life is certainly serious many times, sometimes deadly serious or threateningly so. And I believe, think that play and joy can create a bridge to deeper understanding of the moment or life at large, if you will. And again, I say that for me, right? It shows up in that way. And so I aspire towards play in the same way that I aspire for compassion. Trust me, 100%. Car accident, I was not immediately compassionate about the driver who ran the red light and crashed into three other cars, right? Like, so this is a practice that I don't show up immediately being like, I certainly have compassion for this driver. And as I shared with one of you previously around, like one of my, and now I'm catching myself, would I say it's a regret? Maybe, but I want to give myself grace here. Immediately after the car accident and after checking myself for injury and eventually getting out of the vehicle and kind of surveying what had happened. In that time, I did not approach the driver who ran the red light. They remained in their car, but I didn't go to check on them, right? And that was an interesting reflection for me. I don't punish or fault myself. I fully understand what was happening, but again, in a guide, what would it mean to be guided by compassion in that moment? Would I have made a different choice? And again, I asked that question of myself, not to reprimand my choice in the moment, but simply how do I return to my compass and say, all right, from a place of compassion, maybe it doesn't happen in the moment. Maybe there's a different moment where I can step into that role, right? Where for me, again, compassion is, where's the humanity in this experience? Where's the sense of care, empathy, kindness, all those sorts of things that might fall into that. So yeah, so I think about this as an umbrella sense of joy, or in my case, play, and how I might use that as a guide. So even when life is serious or hard or even painful, right? Can play or joy be a bridge to some sort of deeper understanding of myself or of other people or to this, the world as we're seeing it and experiencing it?
I think your playfulness and that joyfulness really reflects through your actions and how you interact with other people. Because I know when Kat and I found out about your accident, you know, we were both obviously very concerned when we knew all of, like, everything was okay, you know, high overview, everything was okay. I think maybe the second thing we said to each other was, wow, there's not a person we would want to be in a car accident with more than with Chris, because cool, like, understanding person to have that interaction with, you know, not in a way at all, obviously, of wishing that upon you, but of just knowing that if I were in that type of situation, the person I would want to be mixed up with would be someone like you.
I'd be happy to be your wingman on that journey. So,
and what you left out, of course, Christian, you're telling is that, as you say, there's someone ran a red light and hit three cars.
Yeah.
The other way, you were the middle car, and you did in fact check on both of the cars on both sides of you, right, and all the other people. So you were in fact playing the role of caretaker and checking in on lots of other people.
That is true. I appreciate that. Yeah. And but it was one of those moments where it maybe connects to what we're saying earlier. It happened fast, coming back to that reference, right? In that, even though it wasn't necessarily, it was exciting of a different way, right? Not necessarily a positive way, but, and I think the emotions are raw and the experience is raw. And so it's an interesting thing to reflect on. Did I show up in the way that I would have wanted to show up, right? And again, I don't ask that in any sort of, I'm trying not to punish my that choice, because that for me is the acceptance part, right? I accept how it played out and I appreciate your reflection back for what I did choose to do. I do feel good about those choices. And so I go back to the, as a meditative practice, can I come back and check that with play or compassion or wisdom in that moment? And I may have done good things in that moment, and there's more work I can continue to do on myself and on others, because that compassion piece, honestly, that has been challenged in the last 2 years. And without delving into kind of political conversations or socio-political conversations, right, that I've been challenged by certain individuals in the media or the actions of groups of people identifying themselves one way or another or for or against things. And it has pushed me harder into what does compassion look like when people do bad things, or, you know, as I sort of quickly make an assessment or judgment that what somebody's doing is bad, or what somebody is saying is bad, or how somebody voted is bad, right? Like I have these knee-jerk reactions that I'm still in practice of. Does it mean that I try to make them my friend? No, like, again, back to like a misunderstanding of joy or play. But I do think that there's a way for humanity to enter into my space in a more complete way that I see. Where can I find the humanity in that, right? And that's not always easy to do when we're in the midst of a very visceral reaction, whether it's from a car accident or having my rights legislated away, right? Like, so again, I don't want to minimize the work and the effort and the difficulty of that.
I'm reminded of a story. This might be going back too many steps, but my niece right now, she's 2 and a half, maybe. Her parents, my brother and sister-in-law, are two of maybe the most, like, if I didn't have my parents, I would want them to be my parents. They are two of the most emotionally intelligent, just compassionate, present, thoughtful, amazing parents that you could want to have. And my niece is very, her temperament is naturally very, she's very empathic. She's, you know, nature, nurture, we can talk about whatnot, but she's always been very observant and reacting to things in a way that we've been like very early. She's very aware of that. And she started this thing where if a boundary is pushed, or if there's, you know, if there's some kind of, you know, no, we don't do that, or we talked about that and we don't do this, her reaction will be to ask, are you happy? Sort of in a pleading, like, is it okay? Like, are you happy? Like, I did this, you happy? And trying to, and we've just, it's kind of become this thing where we're trying to be like, how do we talk about how someone can, you know, and then the answer can sometimes be like, well, no, like, I'm not happy right now, but it's okay. And have it be that it's safe and things are okay. And there can be unhappiness. And I wonder with her too, like, what is happy even mean to her at this point? Is that just her? What is she checking for when she's asking for, are you happy? And I'm just thinking of that this whole time. I'm like, is she just doing a compassion check with people? Like when she sees like that there's distress and that someone is not, it just made me think of that.
Care. Yeah, for me, care, right? How are we expressing care to ourselves? How are we expressing care to one another? And care doesn't have to be qualified as happy or not. Like care is when you're feeling not happy or feeling happy. It's just a care check, right? And that's good. I think many of us have discovered the need for that, the importance of that, and making space for that. So, yeah.
I have the sense that a barrier for people, especially over the last number of years, societally, has been the story that if I am compassionate, it will be used against me. Mm. That if I show empathy, it will make me weak in fighting for a righteous cause. Or if I connect to you or give you the benefit of the doubt, it will not be reciprocal. And therefore I will be a victim of use in some way. Mm-hmm. In the world of improvisation, I see it, I hear the conversation as a sort of a push back against our famous yes and principle. Mm-hmm. There are conversations about yes and isn't good. It gets abused. We shouldn't have to say yes. That becomes coercive and you know, sort of like I'm being forced into doing things without consent because I have to say yes, which I think is, as we've talked about here before, a misinterpretation, right? Accepting and building with an offer isn't the same thing as having to agree with something. But if there's a power dynamic, you know, yes and also does not address power dynamics, right? So accepting and building with offers from a position of power feels and looks different from accepting and building with offers from a submissive position. I'm curious how any of that lands.
One thing that comes up immediately for me is the distinction on the yes and piece of it, the distinction between a tool that can help us tell a good story, right? Building on each other's contributions in order to progress a story, that distinguished from the way we treat each other. Because I think when you introduce power, right, we're introducing relationship. And I think that fundamental to any good school of improv, I think, is that we take care of one another, back to care. And we that shows up by make your partner look good or, you know, build on each other's ideas in other ways that maybe manifest. So I think the way we treat each other matters. I think it's foundational. I think a good story even is not just action, but comes from a foundation of relationship. And pulling from my kind of background and expertise on leadership, I think leadership itself comes from a foundation of relationship. And so when we think about yes and how that gets used, misused, and whether that's a useful tool or not, I sort of measure it based on how are we treating each other? Are we treating each other with care? Am I exploiting a tool to manipulate you? And it could be any tool. Or am I exploiting a tool to build a relationship with you, right? And that I can't assess that alone. You and I get to assess that together, right? That you also get to weigh in on whether this relationship, how you're feeling treated in this relationship, and I get to assess you and how you're treating me, right? And so it inherently binds us into the outcome, or the whatever label we want to choose has to be mutually kind of decided upon, which I think about, you know, are we agreeing on the story that's being written right now? Is there agreement? Do we see the same things? How can we ensure that everyone is seeing and thinking the same thing? Do we have a common understanding of this relationship? Because I think that's where it can get us into trouble, is when we don't have a shared understanding of what this relationship is or isn't. Are we focused on getting on the same page with one another? Right. And so thinking about how that permeates, those are the thoughts that come immediately to mind when you talk about the yes and piece.
I'm curious as we move forward with you having accepted my offer literally.
Yes.
And we circle into 2022 and you are bringing all of that, you know, beautiful basket of goodies with you. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you're looking forward to exploring with us? And yes, anding.
I have a list of future topics, some of which I know something about, some of which I know nothing about, but they intrigue me. And so I have this running mental list of things that I either want to talk about or write about or just sit in a room with other brilliant people like you all and talk about, you know, or maybe with listeners, we find like something, but like they all intrigue me. And so there are things that some of these have longer arcs behind them. Some of them are relatively new, but one of the things that there's a whole nother story, a whole nother episode about is this question of what matters to me and why. And I think that's a really powerful question. And so thinking about how do we use that question to think about storytelling and to get practice in telling our own story, shaping our, like, how would I tell my own story from that prompt, what matters to me and why? It's values clarification. I shared, you know, in this conversation, I shared my three core values as wisdom, compassion, play. What matters to me and why might be a reflection of that. Or even Simon Sinek's start with why, right? And so that's one topic area. The other one, which we talked a little bit about, is change and why it's difficult, right? So what are the needs for us to feel courageous in that? Or what are the contextual needs, right? There's the desire or the recognition of a need for change, an open mind. There's a commitment to kind of leaping and stories about that. First and only time I went bungee jumping. This is back a high school graduation trip. We were at some, you know, beachfront place, and my best friend and I decided we were going to go bungee jumping. And we were very excited about that. It was on a crane over a little bit of water, probably not deep enough for what we were doing. And so my best friend went first, and I watched him go up, watched him kind of get all strapped in and whatnot. And they opened up the gate to the crane, and he leapt off and he bungee, right? Looked amazing. Then it was my turn. I get strapped in, I get put in the crane, I get lifted up with one other person who's there to help me make sure it's all safe. And he says, all right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to open the gate and I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, bungee. And when I say bungee, you leap, you jump off and you go. And I said, got it. Understood in my head, as I'm pointing to my head right now. He opens the gate and he's like, ready? Sure. He says, 3, 2, 1, bungee. I don't move a muscle. Nothing happens. I'm like clenching onto the gates, right? Like there's no way my body's allowing me to like throw myself off. And so he's like, okay, that's okay. Okay. Take your time. He's like, that's okay. Let's do it again. 3, 2, 1, bungee, nothing. Right. And so rationally, this was a desired event, right? I chose everything up to this point, right? But my body didn't have a say, and it was now rejecting this choice. And so I was probably up there a good 15 minutes, felt like 4 hours. At what point the person who was up there with me says, so you've got two choices. You either need to jump off at this point, because he had counted multiple times and I had not moved. I was like, okay, just one more time. No, just give me a second, right? Can catch my breath. And he's like, I either need to go back down in the crane because we've got more people waiting, or you need to jump off. And it was sort of the like, I was more afraid of the embarrassment of going back down on the crane, having just watched my best friend do it. And so sure enough, he said 3, 2, 1 bungee, and I eventually went. But for me, I come back to this topic, again, future topics, change and why it's difficult, right? So I had the desire, or I thought I did, and mentally I understood the steps that were needed. But sometimes leaping, the act of leaping is quite difficult, right? And what's that about? Why is it difficult? And sometimes pragmatically, right? We don't have time for the changes that we imagine for ourselves, or we don't have the resources, or I'm just kind of, maybe I don't have the support, right? And sometimes maybe it's the motivation, or sometimes there's just some block that like, I don't trust that I'm going to land safely. This is everything I wanted. It looks amazing. And I'm not sure I can land safely. Or other barriers, right? Like that, what's the same wine, different bottle? Like, oh, I've done it once, done it at all times. Or why do we put it off, right? The fear of failure, which ties into some improv principles, or, right? Like I somehow the first try ought to be the best try, or perfectionism can be a barrier, or I want the easy way out, that can be a barrier, or, you know, pressure. Anyways, all those things change and why it's difficult. Third topic, activating our growth mindset, right? Like I want to think more about that and continue to build on that. Thinking about how we move through that cycle of, you know, challenge, chaos, competence, right? Like when we're kind of unaware and awareness, and then we're like unconsciously competent for me. So we can get to consciously competent. Unconsciously competent is another form of play when we're just sort of in kind of that flow mode, like Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's like state of flow, right? So that for me ties into the growth mindset, thinking of our brains as muscles. I love, you know, with Coppett, we think about improv as the gym. So I think about what about our brain as a muscle that we are, you know, looking into neuroscience and the elasticity of the brain, stretching our comfort zones, those kinds of things. Willful awareness is another topic that I've been thinking about. And that for me ties in presence, attention, some of what we talked about today, listening. One of my kind of life mantras is, you know, listen and be changed by what you hear, or listen so that your heart can be more open. And I think my values tie into that. So noticing what's there, noticing what's not there, right? Being able to notice what's missing. Back to geocaching example, right? We're surrounded by potential, including the people around us. And so seeing a world full of offers feels very different from then seeing a world full of problems. So how do we explore, how do we practice and teach that? And then maybe the last one, cultivating connection, which is what I think that you all, Olivia, Kat in particular, I come back to my thank you for inviting me, not just on this podcast, but into the Coppett universe, because one of the best experiences of that has been the way you all have invited me in, the way you all have intentionally, you've metaphorically high-fived me and said, so glad you're here. And you continue to do that. Many years ago, I had an opportunity to do a summer intensive in improv. Charna Halpern from IO Theater had opened up the session. And one of the things that she had said is that here in our theater, we assume everyone is an artist, poet, and genius. And that for me just stayed with me because it was that sense, that simple assumption created a whole culture. And I think you all have done that, something similar with Coppet is that it's the way we treat each other. We're back to that, right? The way we support one another, the way you've supported me and high-fived me in that sense of, Chris, we're so glad you're here. So I think about that from let's expand that into more thinking. How do we cultivate connection? How do we build community on the spot? How do we listen and be changed? How do we bring curiosity and empathy into our conversations, into kind of the broader world around diversity, equity, inclusion, right? That we're struggling from fractured connections. How do we build for belonging and inclusion? How do we navigate those bumpy, awkward, hard conversations? How do we learn the art of apology? I think that many of us suck at apologizing, right? Like, and because nobody's ever talking about it or teaching us or helping us understand what's missing in them. Coming back to what you said, you know, what's power with versus power over? We talk about status and power over, but can we have power with? Can we rethink of power as something we do with one another rather than over one another? So yeah, those are some things that I'm thinking about. Those are some topics that may have been a longer list than you were expecting, but that's what's on my mind.
That's all.
So, it's a glorious list. And I feel like if the listeners could have seen our faces as we were listening to Chris's list, we're like, talk about classic joy. We were like children on Christmas or birthday or whenever you get a surprise present moment.
Yes.
Thank you for not holding back.
Yes. You're welcome.
Well, we are not only delighted for ourselves, but for everyone else that we will be able to dole out those gifts as time goes on. And this will be one of those places. We are not just inviting you in as a guest, of course, but as one of the regulars on the Dare to Be Human podcast.
So that play space. Yes.
So come on back, everybody. Join the conversation. Thank you, Chris, for being here for the first time.
Again, thank you. First, hopefully of maybe more to come, but again, thank you. Very explicitly, thank you, Livia. Thank you, Kat, for inviting me, not just in this moment, but in the larger moment that we are now sharing together. So I look forward to it. And I look forward to the listeners being part of that experience as well. Whomever you are out there, I'm very excited to build connection and cultivate that journey with you as well.
Well, I think I can speak for both of us and anyone who knows him or had a chance to work with him, that we are certainly glad he's here.
Yeah, it's been coming up on the first quarter of a year that Chris has been with us, and we're definitely feeling the impact of his presence, all in good ways. Tomorrow we have the second of our, I guess they're insights, not offsites.
Ooh,
we both find that, right?
Yes, writing it down.
He'll be running a values meeting for us internally. Some work that we've been having him do for our external clients as well, and it's been really delicious to watch him integrate into our leadership workshops and have that special extra flavor in our Coppet programs, especially with our higher ed clients or our specific leadership programs, because that's his experience. So if you are enjoying this conversation and want to hear more from Chris, don't worry. There's much more where that come from.
But
there's much more where that came from. Whee!
Finding joy in that. So please reach out to us, hello@daretobehumanpodcast.com, and like, subscribe, review, share, spread the joy, and we'll see you next time.
Woot.